The power of public opinion, I suppose, is on display in our passage this morning, the ugly side of public opinion. I'm sure that most of us have seen instances in our lifetimes of different places in our own country and also different places around the world where a riot has broken out. Now, I have never been part of a riot. I've never been in very close proximity to one. But even the news coverage that I have seen on television is scary to me. I mean, it's really scary. I wouldn't want to know what it's like to be in a crowd that has completely lost its mind. Well, that's what happens here, the second half of Acts chapter 19. Now, I just want to share this with you, and as I mention it, you'll probably readily think about it and agree with me. I hope you will. You know, in the book of Acts in particular, in these different places where Paul goes and the gospel is being shared, you know, riots aren't really that uncommon an occurrence. I mean, the witness of Acts, the witness of Luke in his book of Acts, makes mention to riots a number of times. In chapter 14, we have a riot. In chapter 16, we have a riot. In chapter 18, we have a riot. We're going to have another riot mentioned in chapter 20, I believe. But in this case, in Acts 19, Luke seems to describe this riot with this huge level of detail. And that was the first thing that struck me as I was looking at this passage. Now, it seems a little bit odd to me that Luke describes this incident in Ephesus. And why do I say that? Because this riot really kind of, in the end, came to nothing. We have all these details about this craftsman, Demetrius, coming and stirring up the local 427 union of silversmiths, and it kind of spreads like wildfire through the whole city, and it causes this uprising, and they come together, and there's all this shouting, and there's all this, I suppose, camaraderie of madness, and then someone from the government stands up, a city clerk, and he just quiets the crowd, and they just go home. And it seems like, okay, nothing really came of this. Nothing really happened here. And so I was asking myself, you know, why does Paul, or why does Luke dedicate so much time and so much detail to this story, this incident? You know, one thing that we could say is that it's another illustration, of which we've had many so far in our study of Acts, another illustration of resistance to the gospel. So last week we talked about religious resistance to the gospel, both from the Jews and from the polytheistic Greeks and Gentiles. And then today, as I mentioned, we have more of an economic and a political resistance to the gospel. Is that what Paul is trying to communicate here? That, you know, in whatever sphere of life that we are operating in whatever sphere of life that is present in any given situation with influence, that there is going to be resistance to the gospel. That's not bad. It's not bad to go right there, that Paul is just illustrating once again that there is resistance to the gospel. But as I thought about it, I thought, you know what, there's more to it than that as well. Yes, resistance is a big part of it, but rather than focusing on the negative, I started focusing on the positive as I thought about this. And so the positive component in this equation is the gospel. And I asked myself, you know, why did the gospel in Ephesus, out of the Ephesian church, this is Paul preaching in the hall of Tyrannus, I mean, why did the gospel in this case provoke such a harsh reaction? And here's the optimistic part. You know, Paul is in Ephesus preaching the gospel. And now, in the Greek world, you have to understand, in the Greek-Roman world, new ideas are coming into societies and into the culture all the time, and they don't encounter near this much resistance. But what seems to have been happening in Ephesus is that not only was it changing people's minds in such a way, it wasn't just changing people's worldview about, you know, how things worked. It was changing people's behavior. The gospel was changing people's behavior. It was changing what they desired and what they cared about, and it changed their priorities to such an extent that it started to have an effect on the whole city of Ephesus. And so the resistance that we talked about, this riot, is a riot that was born out of fear. All of a sudden we have this new idea, we have this good news, this gospel gaining traction, and it threatened the status quo. If the gospel continued to gain traction in Ephesus and in Asia, it was going to change everything. Now for us, for those of us who believe in the gospel, for those of us who try and live out of the gospel, both its realities and its future promises, this is an encouraging thing. In Ephesus, what specifically started happening, and this is a big issue in the Bible as it is, but one of the main ways that the gospel was shaping and transforming this community in Ephesus had to do with the people's buying practices. Now, this is very fitting. Because how many of you know what Artemis was the goddess of? Artemis, the temple to Artemis, actually stood outside the city of Ephesus, and it was considered one of the seven wonders of the world. But Artemis was kind of the bountiful Mother Earth goddess. And the worship of Artemis and the cult that surrounded this goddess Artemis was the foundation of the entire banking system of Ephesus. Artemis was the goddess of money in the ancient world. Money and success and all of the things that even today the world sets on such a high pedestal. And so isn't it fitting that the huge resistance, the huge provocation to anger in Ephesus surrounds money? Now, I think you'll all agree with me that this has traction today too. That Artemis, even though none of you had, you know, really all that much information about her, that Artemis still has her worshipers today. Do you agree with that? But so back to what is encouraging about this text. You know, so often as Christians, and I've mentioned this before, we kind of consider our faith a private thing. And when we think about the transformation that the gospel brings about in our lives, what we are thinking about primarily is how it changes us personally. And maybe we go a little bit farther than that, and we have a concern for our families as well, particularly our kids. But what God is teaching us in Acts chapter 19 is that our faith in the gospel and the way that we live it out and the way that we participate in its transformation of our lives can change so much more, so much farther beyond us than we can even imagine. And now before we start talking about concrete ways in which it can do that, I should just remind you, back to what we talked about at the beginning, that if we truly start to do this, not just as individuals, but say as a congregation, or as a community of Christians, or, you know, I like to think bigger than this even, as a nation of Christians, things are going to get difficult because there is going to be resistance to it. So let me just give you some examples. And we'll stick with money first, okay? I just want to tell you that every single dollar that you spend has ripple effects that virtually none of us think about. It doesn't just affect the products that we buy. It doesn't just affect the services that we buy. It affects the institutions and the companies that produce those products. But how many of us really research what companies we buy those products from? Probably not many. Those institutions, those companies impact where they are located and where they are from in different parts of the world. Much of what we buy is not American made. Much of it is imported from different parts of the world. And so by buying our coffee, for instance, from a certain store, a certain brand, we are supporting much more than just a product. We are supporting companies, and we're supporting governments, and we're supporting a world economy in some way. And that has implications. Because there are some companies that conduct business above board and with a concern for all of the stakeholders involved in that company, from the owners to the employees to the customers to the greater societies which these companies exist in. And there are other companies that completely disregard the stakeholders apart from what they are providing as a bottom line, setting money up as the god of their enterprise. And so on any giving shopping trip that we do, we are choosing products and we are picking products, and most of us have a criteria for products. I'm sure that when it comes to groceries, we're thinking about price and we're thinking about taste and we're thinking about quantities and how much that's going to offer us. We're thinking of a very, very personal, we're thinking of a very individual risk-reward scenario, right? If I get this product, I expect to get this much out of it. Or if I pick this product, I expect to get this much out of it. We don't really have much concern beyond ourselves. But let me say this, and we'll think about this on a grand scale. What if Christians in our country united and said, you know what, we have decided that we are going to support the companies that treat their workers well around the world. And we're not going to go for buying on price. We're going to buy things according to the God-pleasingness level of the different organizations that we're buying from. Do you think that would make some people extremely mad? It would. You know who would get mad? The rest of the people who are still buying on price. Because some of these companies are going to lose their market share, some of it, as Christians, and they're going to have to raise prices because they're not selling things based on such mass quantity anymore. You're also going to make, the bigwigs of any given company that's not doing its dealings above board, you're going to make them angry. You're going to make the governments, the societies and the governments within which those companies operate, you're going to make them angry. But in the long run, these are little ways, based on the products that we buy every day and don't think about, these are ways, even these, where we can glorify God and where we can invest in the kingdom that He is bringing into existence even today. Now, I mentioned that. Let's talk about, we'll stay in the realm of money, and we'll talk about, good enterprises versus bad enterprises. What if we as a nation of Christians decided, you know what? We are not going to view pornography anymore. We are not going to invest in anything mutual fund-wise that is going to support that industry. What if we are going to take a stand against something that none of us would argue is any good for society? It's only a destructive and a deteriorating force in our society. Do you think that that would change things? Yes, it would. Do you think that that would make some people angry? Yes, it would. How would they show their anger? Well, they would probably desperately try and point out those different Christian leaders that have fallen from grace because of pornography or infidelity. They would probably try and make it seem like we were all hypocrites for this. And that would hurt us as a church, but think, in the long run, how much would we be protecting our children? How much would we be investing in a redemptive society if we were just to stand up together and say no to it? We're not going to have anything to do with it. We're not going to support it in any way. Changes the world. Changes where we live. Take the lottery. Take the lottery and gambling. Seems like such a harmless thing. Seems like such a harmless thing, but it's a poor tax. It's a poor tax, and even buying a lottery ticket with that dollar that we were to spend, that is feeding into a system that is exploiting people, exploiting our neighbors, people that can't afford it, because they are putting their trust, rather than putting their trust in God, they are putting their trust in potentially, oh boy, if I'm really lucky, I'll get a big payday. Same can be said of some money lending organizations that exploit the poor. But what if we as Christians just decided, you know what, that's not a stewardly way to spend our money, and so we are going to step back and we're not going to participate. Now I want you to understand, just like Paul in Ephesus, do you think that he was standing up there and preaching directly against Artemis and preaching against money? I don't think that he was necessarily doing that explicitly, but by preaching the gospel, by preaching gospel priorities, it was just a natural outflow of that. Paul's not preaching against something. Paul is preaching for something. And there was traction, not just in Ephesus, but in all of Asia. People were making different decisions, and people making different decisions in a society were ruffling feathers. But take this to its logical conclusion. As more and more people get on board, as more and more people take in the gospel and say, yes, this is the way I want my life to be. This is the way I want my family to be. This is the way I want my community and my society to be. These are the priorities that, if left in place and if honored, we are going to create a much better situation for everybody. That is the influence. That is the impact of the gospel when it is lived out. lived out, it's so much farther than ourselves. And you know what? Living out the gospel, we are still protected on so many different levels, at least in this country. We are protected by our government. As Christians, we can live these things out. We can change our spending habits. We can invest our time and our energy and our money into kingdom building activities, and at the same time honor the government and pay our taxes. And yet, if we are making these intentional decisions with the rest of our income, it's going to change things, and we need to realize that. And this is what we see played out here. Paul isn't preaching against something, he's preaching for something, and these people's lives are being changed by it, and they're rediscovering, or they're discovering for the first time, a close-knit community where people are generous and everyone has what they need, and they are honoring each other even as they are honoring God. That is what Paul is preaching. And the government can find nothing to condemn about it, and so we are protected at that level, but we are also protected by God. God is going to bless our efforts to live out the gospel as we are mindful of all the different implications that it has in our lives, particularly with our money and our spending. He is going to bless the dollars that we invest sacrificially in his ministries, in his churches, in his missions, in his mission organization, in his missionaries, in his kingdom work. And yes, he says we're going to encounter resistance. But brothers and sisters, he also says it is worth it because it's the most important thing. And so what's the takeaway this morning as I finish up? It's an incident that seems to come to nothing, but it illustrates something. It illustrates something extremely powerful, that the gospel not only confronts society, but the gospel lived out, even starting from small roots, will transform society and culture as well. And brothers and sisters, you and I have that power. We have that power if we're going to do the work of being mindful of bringing the gospel into the areas of our lives where we are careless and where we are not mindful. But as I said before, as we work to do that individually and corporately, and we walk beside each other, and we support each other and encourage each other, and we do this together, God is going to bless it in ways that we cannot even imagine. The gospel went out from Ephesus and transformed the entire province of Asia. The gospel goes out from this church and reaches who knows how far. But have no doubt, it's reaching, and it will continue to reach. And we're in this together by the grace of God, which we experience new every day. Let's pray.